Good morning.
Good morning, Sensei.
I want to share with you an experience that I've been living through for the last number of months. It's a little bit hard to even explain exactly, but I guess I would identify it as that it's a koan that has arisen out of just my daily life, my experiences. It started out being confusing and has slowly gotten more and more clear. If I were to pose it as a question or in the form of a koan, I would say is, for whom should I have compassion? You know, there's been any number of public stories that have taken place over the last number of months. The most recent have been the Boston Marathon bombing and the discovery of the three women that were abducted and held captive for 10 years. And then from the CNN webpage, the latest has been a woman named Judy Arias, who apparently horribly murdered her boyfriend. The big discussion is whether she should be sentenced to death or not. The discussion in the public forum, or even amongst people in the office, etc., talks about the incredible suffering that the victims have survived or being asked to survive, and the horrible acts that these perpetrators have committed. This is sort of where this koan comes up for me. It's not so much intellectually as I just discovered in myself having these feelings. You know, certainly the discovery of 10 women, it's almost three women who were held for 10 years, it's almost unimaginable, or it is unimaginable for me actually, to how this is possible and how anybody could survive this. And, you know, certainly that was the general conversation. But I'd be driving in my car, and I would discover that I would be feeling some, asking the same question of the person who did this guy, like, what could have happened to a person like this? What could have existed in his life that somebody would do something like this? And I would think about him, you know, either being executed or going to jail, or there's been talk about releasing him in the general jail population, that'll be punishment for what he's done. And I realized that not only was I having compassion for the women, and just, you know, it's almost I don't even want to imagine what that existence must have been like, but also compassion for what kind of a soul could be so tormented that they would do something like this. This happened a number of times where, almost uncomfortably when I would realize it, I would be uncomfortable with the fact that I would actually be having, I guess the word would be compassion for the perpetrator. You know, I mentioned it to a couple of people that I know, you know, just wondering how do other people see these kind of things? And one response was, I can't go there. The other was something like, that bastard deserves to burn in hell. So those kind of responses didn't make it any easier to make sense out of what I was going through. You know, I was, in a sense, having these feelings come up, just without, there was no, I didn't read something, or nobody told me, you know, you're supposed to do this, or you're not supposed to do it. It was just happening. And in a way, it was a little disorienting because it was so different than my experience with my colleagues or peers that I worked with, etc. So I had feelings of guilt, some feelings of being ashamed. And then I started to think about, in my private practice, I work with sometimes work with couples, and how there are times when one or the other person has cheated, has had an affair on their partner. There are times when physical abuse is involved. And how really it's impossible to see them as a couple or to work with them as a couple without appreciating the suffering of each person, the ingredients that come into the room each night. So there was something there. But ultimately, I knew that I needed to consult an old teacher of mine. I didn't do this directly. I did it through the wonderful world of Google. But I knew that Bernie Glassman could put what I was experiencing into words, or would put a context to it that would make sense. So what I'm going to share with you is what I found. I found a little article online. It's called Buddhism, Reconciliation, and Auschwitz, an interview with Zen master Bernie Glassman. The first paragraph opens, Bernie Glassman, founder of the Zen Peacemakers, has been a student of Zen for over 50 years. Since 1996, he has been leading bearing witness retreats in Auschwitz concentration camp with people from all different faiths and nations. This November, Zen Peacemakers are planning the first retreat involving young adults from key conflict areas. The three tenets of the Zen Peacemakers are not knowing, bearing witness, and loving actions. They deepen the practice of bearing witness at Auschwitz and on the streets, and they practice loving actions based on the first two tenets through their service projects of the Montague Farm Zen House. And so this is the interview. I'm not going to read the whole thing, but there are some things which are poignant, and I think a very profound lesson having to do with taking the practice off the cushion into the real world. It's one thing to chant the Heart Sutra on Sunday morning. It's another thing to live it out under difficult circumstances in our daily life. So the first question the questioner has is, what do you teach at Auschwitz? And Bernie answers, nothing. I am not the teacher there. Auschwitz is the teacher. It's an amazing teacher. I'm always seeking places to learn. Many times I invite people to do the trip with me. Maybe they'll learn something too. I try to bring us into a situation where there is almost no way not to learn. This plunges us into the state of not knowing, and then we can bear witness to the joy and suffering of the world. Many people and groups visit Auschwitz, this is the questioner. What makes Zen Peacemakers bearing witness retreats unique? Most visit and then leave the same day. We stay for 6 days. We also bring people from many cultures, countries, and traditions. We bring people from both sides, children of survivors and children of SS officers. Those who come consider themselves open-minded enough to come, but when they come together in the same room, it's a different story. Problems erupt and people clash. And the questioner asks the obvious question, what happens when people clash on the retreat? If you stay in the cauldron of Auschwitz by the third or fourth day, changes happen. At one retreat, a Jewish man had become friendly with a German woman and discovered her father ran the camp that killed his family. At first, he was enraged, and she was overwhelmed with guilt. Within another day, they went through the cycles of emotions, and they were hugging and kissing. I don't know what would happen if any given person came, but I know they won't be the same when they leave. There is a part of us that allows us to dehumanize people. It's an aspect of ourselves that we don't want to touch. Auschwitz is the world monument of that aspect. The questioner asks, how can we deal with the dehumanizing aspect in us so that it doesn't cause so much harm in the world? And Bernie answers, the first way to deal with this aspect is to remember. And then he says, quote, remembering is the opposite of dismembering. Remembering is putting back together what's been taking apart. After the 8th year of remembering victims, Heinz-Jürgen Metzger, the coordinator of peacemaker work in Europe, said it is time to start remembering the perpetrators. Heinz's uncle was castrated because he wouldn't do the work of the SS. Heinz didn't learn about this for 25 years because his family was disgraced, because his uncle wouldn't comply. When Heinz proposed remembering the perpetrators, about half the participants were ready to leave. I brought up the issue of remembering and honoring the perpetrators at a later retreat, which was very difficult. Honoring means we cite their name, like we do those for those who died here. The goal was to change from just blaming and hating the perpetrators to get into what was going on at a deeper level. So we did a ceremony in the guards tower where each person honors a time when they were a perpetrator or someone was a perpetrator to them. How far can you go in this remembering? If this is one world, and the point is to remember the whole world, where do you stop? That's where your practice has to be. To go into the spaces of what the perpetrators went through and what happened after. Many committed suicide. What else can we do, is the question. Another way is to recognize who we exclude and invite them in. The most common way of dealing with outsiders to our club is to avoid them. At worst, there is lynching, imprisonment, gay bashing, war, Auschwitz. So the question, for whom can I have compassion, can become a brutally difficult question. The reason why it's so emotional for me is twofold. One is I have placed a picture of my father on my altar at home, where I sit every morning. And I ask myself the question, for whom can I have compassion? And the other practice that I do, lest I become arrogant and one up, I ask myself the question on a daily basis, how have I been a perpetrator? It's quite a cauldron, but I think very important. And I think it's a real example of the importance of taking the practice, taking all these things that we talk about oneness and love and joy, and there's a sign on the bulletin board, love everyone. And the real challenge is leaving the cushion and leaving the zendo and going into our daily lives and creating that koan for ourselves. Can you love everyone? Thich Nhat Hanh once said, when another person makes you suffer, it's because that person suffers deeply within themselves, and their suffering is spilling over. Now here's the hard part. He says they do not need punishment. They need help. That's the message they are sending. Now, this quote, I don't remember where I got it from, but when we see black mud and white snow are neither ugly nor beautiful, when we see them without discrimination or duality, then we begin to grasp compassion. And I would add, this is when we begin to know separation as a living truth. Thank you.